Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Ray, will you be buying this Mayweather-McGregor fight on August 26th?
Yes, and you I don't buy any.
So you'll get like sucked into the hype?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a jackass possibility here that you just have to tune in and see.
See, I agree with you, Ray, because I think at some point McGregor's going to get frustrated, and out of instinct, he's going to kick him or do something ridiculous. I really do.
Just make a mental picture of what you're talking about. Like, you know, Mayweather's jabbing him and getting him a few times, and then he's too quick at some point, or, you know, because it's all stand-up, and then all of a sudden McGregor goes, screw this, bam.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ooh,
sweeps
that's not
the leg.
Allowed.
He's going to sweep the leg, and that's it. Like,
if he comes out with the guy from Karate Kid in his corner, then you know there's something going on. He could sweep the leg.
That would Mr.
Miyagi?
Miyagi.
Oh, no, yeah. No. Miyagi was with the Karate Kid, the other guy with the feathered back hair.
Oh, the blonde-haired guy.
Yeah, Sensei. Oh, Sensei was a bad dude.
Yeah, that's very valid.
And the Cobra Kai's, if they come out, then you got something.
Then you've really got yourself a storyline. Sean texting in, this is exactly the analogy I was looking for. It feels like Donovan Bailey versus Michael Johnson, 150 meters. Remember where they had to meet in the middle?
That's not bad.
That's what it kind of feels like.
Michael Johnson pulled the chute.
Of course he did. And it was hyped up like, this is the biggest race ever. The two fastest guys in the world. Yeah. This will be hyped up as the two baddest guys in the world. And that turned into be an embarrassing event because Donovan Bailey smoked him. And I think Mayweather will do the same thing.
They filled the Sky Dome for that?
Yeah, it was at the Dome. And I don't know if they sold out, but there were a lot of people. I remember watching it on TV. It was
I watched it too. And then Johnson pulled the chain right about as soon as he realized, oh, that other guy's really fast, he just pulled the chain, and that was it at about 75 meters.
Oh, one of the bigger bail jobs in sports history. And Bailey gave it to him after the
race. Oh, yeah. He's not hurt. He's a chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was at him.
Like, he should have, because he knew that he was going to lose, and that was it. Like, oh, blew a hammy or whatever. He came up lame.
Would you do that if you were in the same situation? Would you bail on it?
I'd get destroyed.
Oh, I would make it look way worse. I would fall down.
Yeah, drop and
stretcher.
You'd need the Medano out of there.
Imagine getting stretchered out of the Dome.
And a couple of dum-dums drop you on the stretcher halfway through.
I would make sure I hit my head on the track, too, on the way down.
Oh, my goodness!
That would be great.
But could you imagine? So you actually thinking, okay, I can win this or whatever. And they must know pretty quickly, I'm in trouble here.
I did it against Jonas.
Yeah, had you pulled up lame there, that could have been the same thing.
That's what I should have done against Jonas. Grab my hammy.
For those not familiar, Jeff O'Neill and Jonas Siegel raced in the hallway down here at TSN.
I saw it.
The guy, honestly, he is the fastest human on earth.
He's a rabbit.
He's 112 pounds.
Yeah.
Like if you would have run into a headwind, though, you would have beat him for sure. Jonas would have been like the cartoon going backwards.
He's a kite. All of a sudden, he just starts flying the other way. Yeah, Jonas is not the biggest guy, but he can motor, man. Short pace.
Now I know why he bunts in softball.
Yeah, he can get on base, and he can do damage when he gets there.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sam Rosen, the voice of the Rangers, news out of New York today that the Rangers have bought out Dan Girardi, and I don't think people are overly surprised. He's taken a lot of heat, man. He's really, like, you talk about the analytical
community. Yeah, the analytics guys are, I mean, he's probably either one or two behind Chris Russell. Would he be one or two, Ray?
He's one. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he's the leader for abuse?
Yeah, they just pummel him. And so it's obviously Dan's fault that he signed a six-year contract for $5 million.
You should have turned that down.
Yeah, you know, an offer and got something a little more team friendly. So now, I mean, here's a guy that wasn't drafted, basically became a backbone player, and then the game got fast on him, and so he's now overmatched in the matchups they were trying to play him in. He's playing against top six forwards that he couldn't keep up with. So now they're going to buy him out. And they're, this is all part of the Rangers trying to get younger and faster and different. again. You know, I mean, like they've got to clear some salary out, so Girardi's part of the deal. Yet somebody's going to get Girardi. Someone will sign him, and you'll sign him for a 1-year deal at $800 because he's got still a bucket of money coming from the Rangers, and they're going to play him in their third pair, and they'll go, oh, you know what? He's a pretty good third pair defenseman. That's what I think is going to happen because he's not going to be playing against the same people, the same caliber of people that he was playing against in New York for the most part.
So you see him kind of as like a Roman Polak type situation?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely I do. Because, now don't forget, Roman, I think, doesn't Polak make $2 million?
Yeah, 2.5, wasn't it?
Yeah, Girardi's going to be way less than half of that.
Yeah, I think he starts over because he's playing with house money now. So you can, I don't think he would be a bad third pairing for anybody, including the Maple Leafs.
I agree. On a good team where you're not asking him to do too much, you're looking at 12 to 15 minutes, I believe he would be able to do that and do that in a really satisfactory way. I really do. He can't play in the top four. The guys are too fast for him. And so he gets caved in. And so whatever team signs him, the analytics are going to say that, wow, they signed this player that has these numbers, which look terrible. And of course they are, because he's playing in the wrong spot by a mile. And now the team that decides to sign him, if there is one, and I think there will be, they'll look at him, and they should look at him, in a completely different light.
It all comes down to how you move around on the ice now. If a team gets a sniff, and once again they watch the Penguins with the speed, I mean, Bob was talking about maybe Stepan being talked about. He ain't moving around that well out there either.
And no, but, and so, I thought
go you ahead, were, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and so he, but they have to play him because of his salary.
Right.
They have to play him in a top two role, but what if, look what the year Toronto got out of Tyler Bozak.
Yeah.
This year. Like, didn't he look a lot different because they didn't ask him to do very much in comparison to what they were asking him to do before? Stepan and Bozak, to me, are very similar players.
Yeah, and Bozak makes four and Stepan six. So we went from hating Bozak's contract to kind of thinking, that's kind of where you're at.
Well, it's also the line mates you play with, right? Like Mitch Marner injected a lot of life into those two line mates, JVR right. and Bozak. All of a sudden, it was like, wow, these guys are hopping. Actually, they passed it to Mitch, and Mitch made their lives a lot easier.
Ray, do you think, though, the Leafs will continue to do that next year, or do you think they might have a sniff at Marner with Matthews out of the gate?
Well, if they do, then... I think they like... Well, it appeared they like Nylander and Matthews a lot together. And I don't know why that would change. Because Babcock has said, right, they're not going to move Nylander to the middle. So unless they have some change of heart over the summer, I don't see much change.
Yeah,
other
right.
than if they get forced into something, or they make a move for a defenseman that costs them one of those top nine forwards.
Well, it's an interesting situation that New York finds themselves in. The Habs are in the news today because Bob McKenzie reporting that they're listening on Galchenyuk, and obviously they've determined he's a winger, not a centerman, and they need to focus on the center of the ice. And feels like there's more smoke to that, more of a backstory in terms of how they really feel about him as a player and what he's going to bring. It is kind of deja vu, like the PK Subban stuff. It feels very similar to that,
right?
In terms of maybe where this is going and what's going to happen. But the Habs and the Rangers have been two teams in the East that, outside of a couple years where the Habs have just had blow up weird seasons that have fallen apart on them, they're both two teams with all world goalies, good players that just kind of get to the dance every year. You don't necessarily expect them to win a cup, but you expect them to be a playoff team. But now you look at where they are and how the Rangers are handling Girardi and Stepan, how the Habs are going to handle this offseason. I see those two teams as going backwards as opposed to going forwards. Like, how do you see it, Ray?
I do agree. You know those, there's a balance thing in the gym you slide back and forth on. And if your balance isn't right, you fall off one side. And that's kind of where I think both of those teams are. They've got this balance right now, but they know it's not good enough. So now they've got to slide back and forth and make a couple of moves. And while they're making these moves, their balance might get thrown right off. Like, both of those teams might end up way back, and it wouldn't take much. Like, what if the Canadiens trade Galchenyuk? What are they going to get back? It has to be a forward. It has to be somebody to provide offense. Yet you look at their defense, and Andrei Markov's not getting any younger. They're going to bring in Sergachev. You know, I believe this year he'll be ready, you know, out of junior to play. But do you like Yemelin? Do you like,
Beaulieu?
You know, do you like Beaulieu? Do you like Ben? Like,
I think that team's a mess.
I was just saying, I can't even get a picture of what they are. They got another year of Plekanec. He had his worst year in a dozen last year. What makes you think it's going to be great this year? Like, they're in a really precarious spot. The Rangers are trying to shed money like crazy so they can, you know, complete this turnover of their team. But 2 years at six bones for Stepan is a big hit. So they got to find somebody that's interested in taking that. How do you do that?
Well, it's not easy. And the truth is, there's anxiety hanging over every team, regardless of what end of the spectrum you're on.
Well, I want to ask Ray, if you were an owner of a team, Ray, what would be one rule you had for, because mine would be, it would be something about bad contracts. I would have a certain amount. I'd give you one or something.
But what, like, if you're the donkey who causes them? That's the problem.
But that's what I was saying about the anxiety. Yeah. Like, we were talking about the Leafs yesterday and how great of a situation they're in.
Right.
Yet there's a part of every fan that's like, they're gonna sign someone they shouldn't sign. It's coming. Yeah. They're gonna give some guy. They're gonna sign Shattenkirk, and he'll be brutal in 2 years.
I'm telling you, Shattenkirk is not. He might be in for a bit of a wait. But
they're already linking Shattenkirk to the Rangers. That's why they're clearing this Girardi money.
Right.
But see, if teams didn't watch Shattenkirk close enough this year,
he was awful in the playoffs.
Yeah, they may overpay big on him. My rule I would want to stick to is 5 years for a contract.
I agree.
You start dragging out these things 7 and sometimes to 8 years, and the potential, like, for a disaster is pretty great in a lot of those cases. I don't think the Leafs are even in the ballpark of making a bad signing, because they got and they're forced into this thinking is that they've got too much money they got to lay out in the very near future to those young kid forwards, and they can't bring in a big dollar contract, because that means they're going to have to pitch one of those young forwards away, and there's no chance that's happening.
Yeah, it's true. The fact that these guys
get forced into good decisions,
right? And I think what really benefits them, Ray, is that the three of them all played their rookie years together, and they all had a big impact. So they all made the point right off the hop, like, hey, put the money aside down the road. Like, it's not like one kind of is just back and forth between the Leafs and Marlies, and we think he's got potential, like the Drouin situation, where for a while there, you knew he was a great talent, but you really didn't know when he was going to break out, if he was going to break out. Marner, Nylander, and Matthews made it abundantly clear. Like, they're ready to play, and they're ready to rock, and they're impactful players right off the hop.
It's so rare to see that. And so now, because the dollars are what they are, or the dollars available are what they are, you know, they're sitting in there, and they, you know, before, the managers used to have that big board in the room with all their depth at their positions, and they'd have their contracts beside them. You know, I've been in the office and seen those things when I was playing. You always used to look over the GM's shoulder. Every once in a while, they wouldn't have the door closed over top of it, and you could see where you were on the depth chart, and sometimes it wasn't a very good picture. But you try and nose around there. So now they've got those things, and they lay out the contracts through the next half dozen years, and it's far more complicated than it used to. In our day, it was just, what's your contract in the next year or two? Because it didn't matter. Nobody made any money. Now the decisions you might want to make, you can't. So that's why this draft over the next week is going to be so fascinating to me, because George McPhee has an opportunity that nobody ever, ever gets, and that's to be a new general manager with nothing behind you. There's no names on the board behind you. Every GM that takes over, you've got to clean up a mess that's there. They didn't fire the previous GM because he was doing a great job. You've got to clean up the mess that's sitting there. George has a chance to build a culture, build a vision for the team, build a player pool, build a prospect pool, because they don't have any of it. And so teams are going to try and dump their contracts there. Maybe George takes them and flips them somewhere else for a prospect and a pick. And like I think it's going to be really fascinating. And these names that are out there now are all going to be part of it. They're all going to be in the discussions of, is there going to be a three-way deal between Team A, Vegas, and Team B? You know, like that, I think we're going to see four or five of those for sure. I think this is going to be great theater over the next couple weeks.
I agree. It's going to be amazing. We haven't even brought up Erik Karlsson having a surgery. That's
out for 4 months.
4 months. That's it's obviously a big blow, but he's going to have plenty of time to get back. But
oh, I didn't even know that. Is that on his foot?
It's just it's saying left foot, some tendon cleaned up. So
that's July, August, September. So he's not back till November 1st.
That's also tendons and an Achilles on the same ankle. But he's such a freak. He'll just come back.
Yeah,
and
this guy was banged up.
I'll bet you. I wouldn't be shocked if he plays home opening night.
Skates once and plays home opening.
Yeah. And best player on
ice. 27 minutes.
With a smile on his face. Like, that's the scary part about this guy.
So now that also makes the FNUF and the no move clause and the expansion and Mathot and CC, it makes it all more complicated. And it's a lot going on in Pierre Dorion's office, isn't it?
No kidding. Not to mention, I guess, Chris Neal, they've told him, like, we're moving on.
He's 37.
Yeah, which is not a shock, but he's the longest tenured player.
Tough for him, because he was probably like, hey, I could do it one more year, and they're like, no, you're not.
Not going to work for us.
Yeah. That's Alex Burrow's money right there.
Yeah.
That's what they gave him a 2-year extension. He's 2 years younger. That's Alex Burrow's his deal right there.
Can't do both.
Yeah, you got to be careful. There's no doubt about that. Good stuff, buddy. I think we're going to catch up with you again when? On Monday?
On Monday, yeah. I got a couple of things I got to take care of this week, Thursday and Friday. They might involve my golf club.
Yeah, I figured they might. And watching the U.S. Open. What a shock.
Oh, gee, is that this weekend too? Yeah. Okay.
Put it in your calendar.
By the way, I have a buddy who, what he asks for Father's Day every year is his family to get out of the house so he can watch the Sunday round in peace.
That's a true father right there.
I'm like, I love my family. Get out.
That's a patriarch. That's a guy who knows how to run a household.
I love Dan Murphy.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, could be.
Exactly. Who knows? I love Murph.
Can't confirm or deny.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Enjoy it.
All right, boys. We'll talk to you Monday.